In response to the Galatians' regression, Paul does a couple of things in the book of Galatians. Of course, the problem that faced the Galatians, the problem that Paul was addressing, was their growing inability to follow the gospel. Maybe not even their inability, but their lack of desire to follow the gospel. It becomes evident when we look at the book of Galatians that what was going on was some Jewish teaching, at least a mixture of Jewish teaching, was invading the churches of Galatia. And so they were becoming, they were being influenced, the Galatians were, to include things like circumcision as a standard for acceptance of fellowship. If you were going to be a Christian, these false teachers would tell the Galatians that you would have to follow the ritual laws that went along with the Old Covenant. You would have to follow the dietary restrictions. All of these kinds of things were bound on the Galatians and those that they taught. It became a distorted gospel. That's how Paul describes it in chapter 1, a distortion of the gospel, which really, as Paul points out, is no gospel at all. And so in response to this regression that the Galatians are going through, Paul does a couple of things. In chapters 1 and 2, Paul defends himself as a gospel messenger. He looks at himself as the one who brought the gospel initially to the Galatians, and he reminds them that he did not get this gospel from men, but he got it from God. And if they are truly wanting the gospel from God, then they need to be listening to the gospel that he's presented to them. In chapters 3 and 4, Paul moves beyond defending himself as the gospel messenger, and he moves on to defending the gospel message itself. In other words, he looks at the gospel that the Galatians initially obeyed, the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus, and how that puts away the old law. And the old law points to the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. We see that in chapters 3 and 4. In chapters 5 and 6, as Paul winds down this epistle, Paul moves away from the gospel message. He's no longer defending the ins and outs of the message itself. And what he moves to do in chapters 5 and 6 is he seeks to defend the result of the gospel in the lives of men and women. In other words, what he's going to do in these last two chapters is offer a choice, or offer an observation, if you will. Observe the lives of those that have the gospel, and observe the lives of those who don't have the gospel. Maybe you can even do it in your own life. Look at what you were before the gospel, and look at what you are now that you have the gospel. Which has better results? Which one is the person that you would rather be? And so Paul uses all of these aspects, these defenses in the book of Galatians to bring the Galatians back to the gospel, to help them realize that they never should have left for the old covenant, but they should have followed the gospel of Christ all along. And throughout the book, at various intervals, Paul makes his disappointment in the Galatians crystal clear. We saw it in Galatians chapter 1, verses 6 and 7, where he says, he talks about the gospel that they have followed, the distorted gospel that they have followed. He says, I'm amazed that you are so quickly deserting the gospel for another. We see it in Galatians chapter 3 and verse 1, where there Paul says, you foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you before whose eyes Jesus Christ was publicly portrayed as crucified? And then the third place that we see Paul make this really sharp kind of biting criticism of the Galatians is in Galatians chapter 5 and verse 7, where Paul says, you were running well. Who hindered you from obeying the truth? And that's where we're going to be looking this evening. Beginning in Galatians 5, Paul begins to make this very practical argument. He's kind of stepped away from the detailed arguments of the gospel in chapters 3 and 4. He's kind of stepped away from the meticulous argumentation in chapter 1 and 2 about where he was and how he got the gospel and who he didn't get the gospel from because he wasn't around them and things like that. And now he asks the Galatians to just think very practically with him for a moment. Let's just think this through. Think about it practically with me. Previously, as I mentioned, he's argued about geography and timing. He's argued about Scripture's purpose and its duration. And all of this has been to prove that the old law does not give salvation. That is, the law of Moses does not give salvation. And to prove that only the gospel of Christ gives salvation. And now, in order to prove that same point here, Paul encourages them to look at the results of each of these systems. Look at the results of the gospel of Christ, and look at it side by side with the results of the law of Moses. What does the law produce in your life? What does the gospel produce in your life? However, before he lays that contrast out, we'll see that in the bulk of chapter 5 and 6, but before he lays that contrast out, he expresses, as I mentioned here, beginning in verse 7, he expresses this disappointment in the predicament that the Galatians find themselves in. And that actually is the wrong title there. The title for this should be, and that's the wrong text as well. I failed to change that. The title for this lesson is, as I put it in the bulletin, you were running well. And this is Galatians 5, verses 7 through 12. So I apologize for that. But we're looking at Galatians 5, 7 through 12 here, where Paul says, you were running well. Who hindered you from obeying the truth? This persuasion did not come from him who calls you. A little leaven leavens the whole lump of dough. I have confidence in you that you will adopt no other view, but the one who is disturbing you will bear his judgment, whoever he is. But I, brethren, if I still preach circumcision, why am I still persecuted? Then the stumbling block of the cross has been abolished. I wish that those who are troubling you would even mutilate themselves. Now, those are just a few verses. We've covered a lot longer texts here in this study of Galatians. But there's a lot of information in these verses and a lot of really interesting things here. And so we'll go through it and make some comments on it and hopefully provide some application for our own lives as well as we seek to not be hindered in our own spiritual lives, as we seek to run well, as Paul says in verse 7. The first question that Paul asks is really the crux of the whole matter. This is the whole issue with the Galatians. He says, who hindered you? You were running well. What stopped you in your tracks? What caused you to veer off course? He says you are running well. And this really is not unusual language, especially in Paul's writing. He often describes the Christian life as a race to be run. We see it in 1 Corinthians 9, for instance, that there it is a race set before us. And we race not so as to just sort of run a race and have fun, but we race, Paul says, to win the reward, to win the crown. Paul uses this language a lot. He would use it in 2 Timothy near the end of his life, where he would describe that he has run the race, and the crown of life is set before him. It is awaiting him in heaven. So this idea that the Galatians, comparing them to running, is not unusual in his writing. But it does present an interesting visual here. Because the Galatians are depicted as running this race, and somewhere along the way there was a roadblock. There was something that stood in their way. There was something that hindered them from moving forward anymore. Can you think of anyone who could be described in this way, that Paul describes the Galatians? Maybe you know people in this church, or in your church where you are from, or maybe you know people in your life in general, who you could look at them as Christians and say, you have run well. You could look at them and use the words of Paul, you have finished the race, or you have run the race well. Maybe you can say this even of yourself right now, and really that's the goal, is it not? To be able to look at our own lives and say, we're doing okay. We're running the race as God has designed it to be run, and we are running it with energy, and we're running it with integrity and all of the things that go along with it. But have you ever known someone who was running well? And maybe you see that in their life, that they're just these really strong Christians. Maybe they're elders or deacons or preachers in the church, or just a strong Christian that you look up to, and you would say that there is nothing that could stand in the way of them, between them and their God. They are going to finish the race all the way. Maybe you know people like that, and then what happens? But they fall away. They turn to the side. Finally, they give up on this marathon race. Have you ever known anyone like that? I think if we're honest, if we look around ourselves or consider people in our past, we've all kind of seen that. We've all seen people who have been running well, as Paul describes here in Galatians 5 and verse 7, and yet they did not quite finish the race. we need to understand that things can hinder us. And we need not think that we are immune to the hindrances that come in this life. But the question Paul presents is this: who hindered you? What is it that stood between you and me? What is it that stood between you and the finish line at the end of the race? Paul's points here are pretty interesting. And Paul's going to make it very clear here who absolutely, under no circumstances, ever hinders people. Okay? So he's going to start here with a negative. He's going to say, this is who does not hinder you. Look at verse 7 again. You were running well. Who hindered you from obeying the truth? Then verse 8 says, this persuasion did not come from him who calls you. Understand this. God, under no circumstances ever hinders his people. God does not stand in the way between us and him, between us and the finish line. And yet this is often the very first place that people seek to justify their lack of faith. They say, well, God didn't do this, or he did it, he did this to me, or he hindered me in some way. Maybe you've heard people say things like this. Why did God allow this catastrophic event to happen to me? If he had just kept this from happening to me, I would still be a Christian. Or maybe you've heard people say, you know, why didn't he just stop this from happening? The death of a loved one, or my home burned down, or some event like, why didn't he just stop it? There are some people who even claim that God doesn't exist because he doesn't come and make himself apparent to us, right? If God really, people will say, if God really wants me to know he exists and to follow him, he'd come down and show me. You see, we blame our hindrances on God. But Paul says in verse 8 that this persuasion that you're following, which in the Galatians' circumstances was the infusion of the law of Moses into the gospel, he says this persuasion that is keeping you from the gospel, that's keeping you from Christ, it did not come from him who calls you. It did not come from God. Paul makes this absolutely clear. God did not hinder you from obeying the gospel. He did not make you stop running. And this is something we see elsewhere in Scripture, by the way. You think about 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 33. God does not cause confusion in our lives. God is not the one who's going to bring about this trap, this snare, to kind of trip us up and see if he can get us to stumble. In fact, 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 4 tells us that God desires all men to be saved. 2 Peter tells us that that's the very reason why God is patient with us. He wants all to come to repentance. God does not hinder us. We can ask this question all day long, who hinders us? But the answer will never, ever be God. God is not the one who hinders us. And as the text progresses, Paul really doesn't give a straight answer to the Galatians. He asks, who hindered you? He says, it wasn't God, but he doesn't tell them exactly who it was that hinders them. Probably because they know. Probably because they know exactly who's infusing this teaching, who's hindering them. Paul doesn't explicitly state who it is that's doing the hindering, but it's clear from the immediate context and the context of the whole book exactly who it is. The Judaizing teachers are the one who's hindering them. That is, the false teachers who come in and try and mix the old law with the gospel, that's the one who's doing the hindering. And to drive the point home, Paul uses this subtle jab in verse 9 to really let them know not only who is doing the hindering, but how bad it is. Look at what he says in verse 9. Verse 8, he says, it's not God. It's not him who called you. Verse 9, he continues, a little leaven leavens the whole lump of dough. Which seems kind of like a benign statement that doesn't really mean that much, perhaps. But I think that from the Galatian standpoint, that would have been quite a bit. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. You know who used that statement quite a bit? Jesus did. In several contexts, by the way. And you know who he was talking about in every single instance? Was the Jews, the Pharisees, the scribes, the Sadducees. And here Paul sort of takes those words of Jesus and he says, listen, this is who's afflicting you. This is who is causing you to stumble and fall. A little leaven leavens the whole lump of dough. In Matthew chapter 16 and verse 6 is just one example of the kinds of places that Jesus would use that statement in connection with the Jewish leaders of his day. And now Paul takes that and uses it of the Jewish, the Judaizing teachers of the Galatians' day. But there's an important lesson here in this phrase, a little leaven leavens the whole lump of dough. And I think this is important, especially as we consider what hinders us in our own lives. What hinders us? So often, it's the very small things that hinder us. Well, not at once, but the very small things often add up to great things. That's the whole story of leaven, right? I don't know if y'all ever did this, but I can remember in Bible classes, we would be talking about Jesus, phrases about the Pharisees or something like that, or even the Old Testament thing. And I can remember the Bible class teacher having a bowl of water, and you put just a pinch of leaven in it, and you'd leave it, and you'd come back after worship and look at it, and by the time it was done, it had almost overflowed the bowl. Because that's what leaven does. A little bit of leaven grows to be something great, comparatively. And that's what Paul says about this teaching. And that's the same lesson in our own lives, that what hinders us may not be the big catastrophic event. It may not be the big death blow that everybody thinks it's going to be. Well, as long as that doesn't happen to me, I should be fine. But what it often is the small things that add up over time, the little bits of leaven. The anger that's placed in our hearts when a brother or a sister does us wrong, or the way that we interact with one another on a very small level. Those kinds of things can bubble up and bubble over. What hinders us, it's usually not the major life events. It's often very small things that add up over time. And that's the way it was here with the Galatians. The Judaizing teachers crept in, little by little, and influenced them away from God. It was not God, but they influenced them away from God. Now, what Paul does in verses 10 and 11 is sort of interesting here. Paul's going to begin making this contrast. And this contrast that Paul makes, the contrast that he introduces here, is the very contrast that will be explored in the chapters to come, chapter 5 and chapter 6. He's going to call out this contrast, first between the Galatians and the false teachers, and then he's going to call out a contrast between his own teaching and the teaching of the false teachers. And this contrast, as I mentioned, that we're going to see later, is basically this. Are you like the Jews? Do you follow the flesh? Are you materialistic in the way that you think about God and His relationship with you? Or are you like Christ? Are you led by the Spirit? Are you spiritual in the way that you think about God and His relationship with you? That's basically the contrast. Are you like the Jews or are you like Christ? Are you led by the flesh or are you led by the Spirit? And what Paul does really here in verse 10 is he begins with a similarity between the Galatians who have obeyed the gospel and the Judaizing teachers who are influencing them to abandon it. He begins with a similarity between them, and this is the similarity. Paul has confidence in both of them. He had confidence in both the Galatians and the Judaizers. You might say, well, that's a little unusual that Paul would have confidence in the Judaizers. But look at what he says in verse 10. He says, I have confidence in you, in the Lord, that you will adopt no other view. There's his confidence in the Galatians. His confidence in the Galatians is that they will adopt no other view. In other words, he says, I think you're going to come around. I think you're going to do good for the Lord. You're going to realize the error that you're in, and you're going to come out of that. You're going to realize that there is no other gospel than the true gospel of Christ, and you're going to realize that you cannot mix the two. And by the way, I think there's sort of an interesting application lesson here as well for us. As we consider the hindrances in the lives of others, and we consider how to help others overcome those hindrances, and how we can help others finish the race, it goes a long way to have confidence in our brethren. Paul here instills that confidence in his hearers. He says, listen, I know you're going to make the right choice. He uses that elsewhere as well. In the book of Philemon, he tells Philemon, I know that you're going to do what's right. I know that you're going to do what's honorable. And here he does the same thing. I know that you're going to get this right. Galatians, I have confidence in you. And I have to tell you, the best way to get the best out of people is to assume the best out of them. If we constantly think that our brethren are going to let us down, guess what? They're going to let us down. But if we have confidence in one another, that they're going to do what's right, that they're going to follow God and win the race, then I think it'll go a long way towards us helping one another in that pursuit. So Paul has confidence in the Galatians here in verse 10 that they're going to come out of this. They're going to overcome. But he also has confidence in the Judaizers. He says, I have confidence in you and the Lord that you will adopt no other view. That's his confidence in the Galatians. But then he continues, but the one who is disturbing you will bear his judgment, whoever he is. Here's his confidence in the Judaizers. They will be judged. Paul knows that for a fact. The disturber will bear his judgment. Paul has no doubt about it. And neither should the Galatians. Why? Because they're not following the gospel. Because the Judaizers are distorting the gospel. They're twisting it, making it into something that it never should have been. The opposition, I think it's interesting here how Paul deals with the opposition in this text. Because he doesn't name them in verse 7, 8, and 9 when we think he would. When he says, who hinders you? He doesn't name them. He just kind of throws out that jab, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. And here again, he doesn't name them once again. He says, the one who is disturbing you. He doesn't give them a name. He doesn't validate them in that way. In fact, at the end of the verse, he says, the one who is disturbing you will bear his judgment, whoever he is. Well, they know exactly who he is. And Paul knows exactly who he is. And so he uses this kind of subtle language to say, you know, he's not even worth bringing up. He's distorting the gospel to such a degree. But it is the Galatians' choice. Stay firm in the gospel or suffer the judgment with the Galatians. Suffer the judgment with the false teachers who are influencing the Galatians. Here's your choice. Here's your contrast that Paul's going to explore later. Be like Christ and stand firm and adopt no other view, or stand with the Judaizing teachers. Be fleshly and suffer their judgment with them. Verse 11, he continues this contrast, this time describing himself in contrast to the Judaizers. It's difficult to know here in verse 11 where he says, but I, brethren, if I still preach circumcision, why am I still persecuted? Then the stumbling block of the cross has been abolished. It's difficult to know exactly what is behind this verse, exactly what Paul had in his mind. As he says there, I, brethren, if I still preach circumcision, why am I still persecuted? It's possible that Paul was being accused of teaching circumcision. In other words, the Judaizing teachers would come along and say, you know, Paul's really a Jew. You know, Paul really teaches circumcision, but he's just not telling you the whole picture. It's possible that Paul is being accused of inconsistency here. You could see kind of how the Judaizing teachers might handle this. Paul was a Jew. Paul taught circumcision for years, and now he's flip-flopping. He's going to the other idea now. Who do you believe? Someone who flip-flops, someone who's inconsistent, or us who's been teaching this the whole time? You could see how the accusations would start coming. So maybe that's what's behind it. Perhaps it's just a way in which Paul's past is being used against him. That he was one who taught circumcision in the past, and so they are bringing that up sort of to bring it against Paul in some way. It's really hard to say what's going on in this verse, but his conclusion he reaches here is the same. If, Paul says, hypothetically, in verse 11, if Paul is teaching circumcision, then why on earth is he suffering? By this point, it should be crystal clear, by the way, that Paul was not preaching circumcision. This whole book has been about how circumcision is not a requirement for good standing before God. Paul is absolutely not teaching circumcision for salvation. But if it's unclear at all to those who are still reading this book, if you still think that by some way Paul is teaching circumcision, look at his persecutions. Look at all the ways in which Paul is mistreated, primarily by the Jewish communities in the cities he goes to. Paul had been persecuted severely in this region, in the regions of Galatia. Paul had been severely persecuted. Look no further than Acts chapter 13 and 14. If you want to know about Paul's persecutions, look at Acts chapter 13 and 14. Because there we learn a lot about Paul's persecutions. He would go, and as his custom was, he would teach in the synagogues before he was finally run out of the synagogues. At times, he was even run out of the city. On a couple of instances, he was run out of the city and stoned and left for dead. Other times, mobs would follow him into the next town and run him out of that city. Paul was persecuted for his stand against the old law and his stand for the gospel of Christ. And what Paul says is, listen, I don't know what you're hearing, but if you somehow think that I still preach circumcision, that my message is that circumcision is required, then you must be out of your mind, because I am being severely persecuted for my stand against circumcision. Now, there's a sort of a... I'll take another aside here and make another point of application. Because Paul here takes a stand for the gospel. And what does he get in response? He gets persecution. We see it throughout the book of Acts. We see it in the book of Galatians. In a couple of places, he kind of makes the same argument. If everybody loves you, if everybody looks at you as just sort of, you know, your buddy, and everybody's your friend, I'm talking not just here, I'm talking everybody just loves you to death. I'm not saying you don't have a great personality, but here's what I'm saying. The gospel turns people away. And if you are standing for the gospel, people will be turned away. You will suffer persecution. Suffering, Jesus would say, is guaranteed, as a matter of fact. And I think we see that in the life of Paul. There's no indication in Scripture that Paul was not absolutely a lovable, fun-loving guy. He was attained a great reputation with his Jewish peers back when he was still living the life of a Jew. But as soon as he comes out of that and begins teaching the gospel of Jesus Christ, that stops. And I think we need to check ourselves and wonder whether or not we are actually standing for the truth, actually standing for the gospel. Not that we need to have some kind of a martyr complex. That's not what I'm saying, that we need to look for persecution or look for suffering. But in the natural course of a Christian life, suffering will come. Paul goes on. He says, if he's teaching circumcision, in verse 11, he says, if I'm teaching circumcision, then why am I being persecuted? And he continues as he rounds out verse 11. He says, then the stumbling block of the cross has been abolished. If circumcision is still required, if it is something that I should be teaching, then everything that I'm teaching is wrong. You can forget about the cross. You can forget about the gospel. Many Jews, Paul says, have stumbled over the gospel. The cross is a stumbling block to Jews. He uses that expression not only here, the stumbling block of the cross. He also uses that in 1 Corinthians, the stumbling block to the Jews. The Jews expected this victorious king to come, who would come and reign on earth and be there, reigning on the throne of David. That's what they expected. But what they got was a meek martyr. They got someone who came in and didn't even resist. He went to death like the lamb to the slaughter. This was not what the Jews expected, the cross, the gospel. It's not what they thought would come. And to sort of add insult to injury, to sort of make it all the worse, and this martyr, this dead man, wants you to abandon the law of God. Wants you to abandon everything that's unique about you as a people, everything that you learned from a youth, that God set you apart, and that you're God's special people, abandon it. That's what this Jesus is teaching. That's what the gospel is. That's what the cross is all about. So Paul makes this contrast very clear. Submit to the law or submit to the cross. Submit to the old covenant or submit to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And Paul makes it absolutely clear where he stands on this issue. I'm not teaching circumcision. I am teaching the gospel of Christ, the gospel of the cross. And then we come to what is perhaps the most interesting verse in all of the book of Galatians. Galatians chapter 5 and verse 12, where Paul makes a most unusual wish. Look at what he says as he kind of concludes this opening section. In verse 12, he says, I wish that those who are troubling you would even mutilate themselves. I believe Noah is reading from the New King James, where he says, cut yourselves off, which sort of sounds a little bit nicer, to be honest. Cut yourselves off sounds a lot nicer than mutilate yourselves. Take a step back and look at how Paul's described these false teachers throughout the book. Paul has not spoken kindly of them throughout this book. In chapter 1, verses 7, 8, and 9, he describes them as disturbers. He calls them out as accursed. They are to be accursed, given up to God for judgment. In chapter 3 and verse 1, he says, these are the people who bewitched you into following a different gospel. And he describes the fact in that context that these people are out there trying to attract fools to themselves. They're zealous for your attraction to them. In chapter 4 and verse 17, he says that they're eager to gain these followers. Chapter 4 verse 17 is where it describes them zealous for the attraction that they gain for the Galatians. He says they're eager to get at you. They have this zeal for you. And then as we've seen here in chapter 5, verses 7 and 9, he says these are the ones who hindered you. And he says it again in verse 9. He describes them as leaven, and of course that carries with it all those undertones from Jesus' discussion with the Jews and all of that kind of stuff. The point is, Paul has not dealt with these Judaizing teachers kindly. He realizes them for the danger they are. And we get the idea when we read this book that Paul really doesn't like them very much. He doesn't care for their tactics. He obviously doesn't care for their teaching. He just doesn't think they're very good people. And he makes it abundantly clear to the Galatians. But here in verse 12, Paul goes to a level to which he has not gone anywhere else in this book. In fact, some have described this verse as the crudest of all of Paul's sayings in any of his books. And I want you to understand exactly what Paul's saying here, because it's important that we understand exactly what Paul is saying here. He says in verse 12, "I wish that those who are troubling you would even mutilate themselves." Even cut themselves off. That's what it literally is. Cut themselves off. And if you're thinking what I'm thinking, and if we're on the same page here, yes, that is exactly what Paul is telling them to do. Paul is wishing that these Judaizing teachers that are ripping salvation away from the helpless Galatians, he is wishing for self-castration upon these men. This is a big deal to Paul. This is a serious offense that the Judaizing teachers are committing. Now, this statement that Paul makes, I wish that those who are stumbling you would even mutilate themselves, would even castrate themselves. This is just, I mean, if ever there was a time to use the expression dripping with sarcasm, this is it. Paul is making a very clear point. You want to push circumcision on the Gentiles? You want them to cut themselves off? Well, why don't you cut yourself off, Paul would say. Practice what you preach. You want them to mutilate themselves for no reason. And that's the point. There's no reason for them to practice circumcision, these Galatians, these Gentiles, because it does not affect their standing before God. Why don't you go do something that doesn't affect your salvation at all? Well, Paul is really getting at the throats of these Judaizing teachers. And there might even be a hint here of mocking in Paul's tones. You kind of get the idea here that Paul's mocking their stance, that circumcision somehow puts you in a better standing with God, that circumcision somehow puts you at a level where you are in a right relationship with God. And Paul says, well, listen, if circumcision does that, why don't you just cut yourself off and become super saved? If you have this great idea that you know, circumcision is going to save you, then why not just go the whole 9 yards, as it were, and cut yourself off completely and have this perfect relationship with God? Paul is really getting at their throats here. I think it's also interesting to point out that under the old law, we're talking about the law of Moses, the law that these Judaizing teachers were attempting to follow in conjunction with the gospel, mutilated men under the old law could not enter the assembly of God's people. And that becomes interesting, because now what Paul is doing is he's sort of adding again this insult to injury against these Judaizing teachers, and he's saying, listen, you don't even deserve to be in the assembly of God. That's how severe this is in Paul's eyes. Now, I realize that that's a pretty tough verse. And it's possible that you know, we might look at that verse and say, how on earth could Paul say those kinds of things? How could he even imply those kinds of things? And I think what we're trying to get at when we say that is how can we reconcile this kind of statement with the love of Christ? The statements like these where Paul asks them to do something so harsh, Paul is being very harsh here. It might seem to be really unloving. And I guarantee you, if you went out on the streets and started telling people to do this, you'd probably get some backlash. Because this is considered to be a very unloving kind of thing to say. But I do think it's interesting to consider that this is not the only place that such harsh wishes are present from God's people directed towards those who are not His. The phrase here in verse 12 that Paul wishes that they would even mutilate themselves is very reminiscent of the imprecatory Psalms. Psalms that called down God's judgment upon His enemies. And we'll look at that in our next quarter study. We're going to be studying the Psalms next quarter on Wednesday night. We'll have a whole class devoted to these kinds of Psalms. But let me be brief here about this. The imprecatory Psalms were, as I mentioned, written to call down judgment on God's enemies. These Psalms call for the wicked to suffer. And so, for instance, when the Babylonian captivity was upon the people of God and the Babylonians were zeroing in on God's people, the psalmist would say, God judged them. They're wicked. God, I blessed be the one who dashes their children's heads against a rock. You look at that and you say, how could that be? How can we reconcile these harsh statements with the loving God and the love that we are to have? The fact is, God has promised judgment on those who disobey Him. And while it is not our place to avenge ourselves, while it is not our place to be the judgment or to take judgment out on others, it seems to be in Scripture that praying for God's justice is absolutely appropriate. And this is Paul expressing how serious a error this is that the Judaizing teachers are falling into. Because this isn't just a simple, difference of opinion. This isn't just, you understand Scripture differently than I do. Paul's made it very clear in the book of Galatians that these Judaizing teachers are ripping the Galatians away from the gospel of Christ. Their only hope of salvation, they are ripping them away from. And Paul's only response to them is, listen, you don't belong in the assembly of God. You don't deserve that kind of response from God, that kind of a relationship with God. The love of Christ forces us, understand this, the love of Christ forces us to reach out to the lost. But it also forces us to acknowledge God's judgment, that God will judge those who are not in a right relationship with Him. And so I think verse 12 is just a very interesting verse because it's not how we typically see the Apostle Paul. Going back to this text here on kind of a larger scale, before we close out this evening, this whole text really centers around the question in verse 7, who hindered you from obeying the truth? And that's the question that Paul is trying to get them to answer here in this last part. What's gone wrong? Are you following the law? We're going to see this contrast pretty clearly in the next couple of weeks. Are you following the law of Moses or are you following the law of Christ? Paul makes it very clear as he enters into this last section of the book that God is not at fault in our hindrances. Your persuasion to turn away from the gospel did not come from God, from Him who calls you. It is often our hindrances in our own spiritual lives are very often the result of many small things that add up over time. But we're forced in any circumstance to take a side. Will you side with the flesh? Will you side with the law of Moses or any other man-imposed system that the world throws at us? Will you side with the Judaizing teachers or will you side with the Spirit? Will you follow the gospel? Will you follow in the path of Paul and Jesus Himself? Which one will you choose? And that's the choice that He's going to present to them in chapters 5 and 6. But before we close out this evening, I want to ask you if you are being hindered from obeying the gospel. If there's something keeping you from running the race, keeping you from standing between you and your God. And if there is, I want you to realize that you need to make a choice. Whether you will follow God, follow the Spirit, follow the truth, or turn away from it. And if there's anything that we can do to help you, we would love to have an opportunity to do that. If we can assist you into coming to Christ, or if we can study with you at a later date, we would love to have that opportunity. If you have any needs, why don't you come as we stand and as we sing a song of encouragement.